right, stop. Stop the music. Stop, stop, stop the music. Stop. Bulls fans, all y'all, right now, do me a favor. Just do this with me. On the count of three, I just want you to inhale, and I just want you to exhale. With me on three. Ready? One, two, three. You feel that? You know what that is? That's fresh air. That's a new day. That's good feelings. Because the nightmare is over. Arise, awaken, open your eyes. It's done. It's finished. Chris, my hit list is complete. It is done. The number one dude on the hit list is out of here, brother. We're done. Welcome in to Ball on Bulls, ballsports.com. Big Dave.
See the.
Thank y'all for rolling with us. We're very excited. Overjoyed is the word I got, brother.
Man, first of all, you got a hit list?
You didn't know? Brother, I had a list. Listen.
Should I know? Am I on the list?
Yes, you should know this, brother.
Oh, okay.
You always on the hit list, brother. You always got you at like number five, just in case. You know what I'm saying? But dude, my list was boiling number one. Tanaka was number two.
That's right.
And Gar Forman was number three. That was it. And he did it in order. He did it 3-2-1. Oh, AK. The AK-47, son. Brat. Spraying him. Beautiful thing, man. I'm so happy. I'm so happy. I'm so excited. We got a lot to talk about. We got a lot of shit to say. A lot of things to discuss. A lot of people to laugh at. But since this is the tournament of trash and since a beautiful day of Jim Boylan being fired, we will always have a special guest on when we do the tournament. And Chris will tell you, this is a guest I've been wanting for a while now. I've talked about it. I don't know how many times to Chris that I've wanted this gentleman on. He's a senior writer. He's a Bulls senior writer for The Athletic. He's one of the two reasons I read The Athletic. The other one was Stephen Noe. Shout out Stephen Noe. And I've just always been a fan of his writing because when he writes, it seems like he's writing like it's like very conversational when I read what he's writing, man. It's completely intelligent, it's brilliant, and it's conversational. And I just like his style, man, how he does it. So I want to have him on the show. He decided to come on. He's here, ladies and gentlemen. I give you Darnell Mayberry. What's happening, man?
Man, what's happening? I appreciate that intro. That's the check is in the mail, bro. First time I've ever been called brilliant.
It's the truth, man. Like, trust me, Chris will tell you. Like, I've talked about you so many times to him. I've talked about your writing so many times to him, man. I'm just a fan. So, you're definitely one of the people I wanted to have on the show, man. I'm really thankful that you decided.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me, man. It's an honor. It's a pleasure. But it's crazy that I would be on here days after they just fired Jim Boylan.
Yes. That's what makes the timing brilliant. Yeah. Yes, man. Because the article that you wrote about Jim Boylan, I want to get into it a little later, but that article that you wrote about him, man, like, if I felt the pain. Like, it just felt like it was written straight from your heart. Like, it was like, here go the facts. Why?
In the comment section on one of my articles, he was like, the Bulls have offended your basketball sensibilities. Normally, I don't like people speaking for me. I'm sure you brothers can understand that.
True.
That brother hit the nail on the head. The Bulls have offended my basketball sensibilities.
There it is.
Jim Boylan was the ringleader of that.
Yes, sir, man. Well, we're going to get into him, man, but I got questions for you, bro, like straight up. The first thing I really want to know is how you even got into, you know, being in sports journalism. Like, what was your journey like to get to this point? Like, did you ball like in college and did you just fall in love with writing that way? Like, what was your journey to get to where you are now?
Nah, man, I love basketball. It's my favorite sport. Football is probably a distant second. But you know, I just, like a lot of kids, wanted to go to the NBA. You know, you wanted to play ball for a living, and then you realize you have no shot.
Yeah.
And so I started thinking, well, what's the best way I can stay close to the game that I love? And, you know, after high school, when I graduated high school, I graduated from a school in the D.C. area, suburbs in Falls Church, Virginia. So, you know, when I was coming up, Michael Wilbon, Tony Kornheiser, those guys were columnists for the Washington Post. Steve Weish was the Wizards beat writer at the time. He's moved on to NFL, doing things with, I think, NFL Network now. But, you know, those guys. And then right after I graduated, PTI started, I think either my senior year in high school or right after that. And I'm thinking, okay, you can go from newspapers writing about sports to television. And I wanted to be the next Stuart Scott, the next SportsCenter anchor and that sort of thing. And someone told me, you know, you can always do television, but sharpen your writing skills. Be able to tell a story. Be able to really write. And then people can't take that away from you. You can always do something else, but you can fall back on that writing. So when I went to college, man, I went with a mission to be able to become a sports writer. And fortunately, man, like it happened for me immediately, and I'm living my dream. My dream was to become an NBA writer. I gave up the Sports Center dream once I saw my first byline in the paper, and fell in love with seeing my name, man. So I wasn't good enough in high school to get my name in the paper like that from the game, so I had to get my name in the paper through writing, and I just fell in love with it, man, and stuck with it.
Mm. So
yeah, that shows your age. You talk about byline in a paper.
Yeah, you're like, what?
Nah, like, right. People like newspapers. Like, what? Figure it out. But so you went to school in D.C. So how did you get from D.C. to Oklahoma?
I was in, like I said, the suburbs, Falls Church, Virginia, right there on the border, basically. But so I graduated high school there and then went to Norfolk State about 3 hours south. Yeah. So when I went to Norfolk State, that's when I got hooked up with all my internships, and, you know, I worked at the school paper, and, you know, I just grinded from that point on, got internships. When I graduated Norfolk State, my first internship out of college was at the Akron Beacon Journal. Mm. And so I was working there with Brian Windhorst and Terry Pluto, who, you know, longtime columnist there in Ohio. So a lot of people helped me out along the way. And when I got from Akron, when I went from Akron, I was there for a year. After my internship, they hired me full time. And then I was only there for a year. And then the Hornets moved to Oklahoma City. The New Orleans Hornets, because of Hurricane Katrina, if you guys remember.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I was originally hired by the Oklahoman to cover Oklahoma State football. But, you know, once Katrina hit, it hit like a week before I moved to Oklahoma from Akron.
Wow.
And, you know, I ended up covering Chris Paul's first 2 years with the Hornets in Oklahoma City because of Katrina. And then I just became an NBA writer from there, man. So I've been incredibly lucky and blessed to kind of just be in some of the positions I've been in.
That's beautiful, man. So yeah. Writing for Oklahoma City Thunder, I mean, I've always wanted to know what that atmosphere is kind of like, because from the outside looking in, it kind of gives me like a college feel, you know, how their fans are and how they treat their players. Is that accurate?
Definitely, man. I mean, like, they do those little routines and traditions, like standing up until the first basket is scored, you know, to the home team scores the first basket, you know, prayer before the game. I think they're the only team in the NBA that does a prayer invitation before the game. So, and you know, like their first playoff series, I'll never forget it. They lost to the Lakers in six on a Pau Gasol tip-in. And the fans stayed after they lost and gave them a standing ovation for like 3 minutes. And if you go back and you can YouTube it, Mike Breen and I think either Jeff Van Gundy or Mark Jackson, they were doing the call. And Mike Breen was talking about how he had never seen anything like that. You know, the team just was eliminated in the first round by the eventual champs, the Lakers. But the fans appreciated them so much that they decided to give them a standing ovation for like 3 minutes for the season that they had. So it was a lot of love, and it still is, man. I mean, I don't care what player goes through there. It's a lot of love that they get from the fans down there.
Wow. So I imagine if it's like that just for that, then that means the players like Harden and Westbrook and Durant probably still get that super love down there too, right?
Not Durant.
I forgot the cupcake. Excuse me. I forgot. It slipped my mind. Yeah, you're right. But, yeah, I'm sure they get – but what was that like for you, man, when they went to that finals? What was that like covering the NBA Finals, man?
Man, you know what? Honestly, it was a blur. It wasn't that long ago. you know, in basketball terms, it was 8 years, but that's not that long ago. But it was a blur because there was so much that happened that season. There were so many, you know, big games, fun moments, wild, crazy shots, you know, just a bunch of stats that Russ and KD were putting up. And even Harden, he would come into games and just do his thing. You could see that he was a star in the making. And by the time you got to the finals, man, it was just you were on fumes and but you could try to appreciate it because that was LeBron's first championship.
Right, correct.
You know, he had been there and he had lost, but you're seeing him really take the throne in the NBA with his first ring. So you tried to really appreciate it, but the workload was so intense, man. A lot of it became a blur, honestly.
Wow. Man, and OKC, did you see three MVPs on that team back then?
Nah.
Was that something that you saw?
Nah, you saw Durant. You definitely saw Durant. And you knew Westbrook was, you know, he wasn't backing down from anything.
Right.
And you knew Harden at that time. You know, I took a lot of flack back then because I was saying they needed to be starting James Harden. And people were like, nah, you got Thabo Sefolosha. It's only one ball. I'm like, Thabo Sefolosha?
Right, exactly.
No disrespect. I mean, he was right. A great defender in his day, but, like, this is James Harden we're talking about. He's just on a different level, and they got to make a way. You know, they had to try to make a way, and they never took that step to at least put him in the starting lineup. So, but no, people, you know, I was actually in a group chat with some writer friends yesterday, and they were talking about something else, and it came back to the Thunder and how they had three MVPs. And I'm like, no, they had one MVP. Mm. The other two developed into MVPs, one when he went and got his own team and the other when, you know, he was left on his own. So, you know, you can't say that team had three MVPs. They had three MVP caliber players, but at the time they weren't three MVPs.
No, because I can tell you this, like when Harden got traded to the Rockets, and Chris will tell you this, when Harden got traded to the Rockets, I came on the show and I said, dude, Harden is going to average like 40 points a game. Mm-hmm. Like he's going to be a monster. And Chris told me I was crazy. Everybody told me I was crazy, dog.
I like Harden. I knew he'd be good, but they was right about how good he would be. So yeah. I thought Harden should be starting too, but Dave, you were on point about how great he could have been. He, you know, he would be. I thought he'd be a good player, a very good player, but I had no idea he'd be this great.
I'm with you. No idea he'd be this great either. I mean, I knew he'd be good, but to see him doing what he's doing now, I didn't see that. And credit to that man because, you know, the last we saw him in Oklahoma City, the narrative was he was a partier. He was going out this and that, you know, came up small in the finals, even back then in 2012. And he really changed some of his habits, I'm sure. His workout habits, I'm talking, you know, his diet, that type of thing.
Yes, sir.
And really just transformed his game to new heights, man, and you got to give him all the credit for that.
Mm. Who was your favorite player to cover, to write about when you were in OKC?
Probably KD, because his greatness was evident. You could clearly see how great he was, but then he was such a good dude just to work with. In the locker room, you know, if you needed something, he would do anything he could to help you out. It's kind of sad to me to see like how the narrative has gone on him, because I think deep down the guy is really a genuine guy. He's probably one of the most genuine guys I've ever covered in the NBA. So I'd probably say KD.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, because other players I've heard things about, but, I can't confirm none of it. But yeah. KD, I've never heard anything bad about. Everybody has had that same thing to say about him, especially his time at OKC.
Man, I'll give you a quick story. I went back to Maryland, C. Pleasant, Maryland, where he's from, to do a big story on him. I think this was maybe the year he made his first All-Star game. And I went to the little community center that, you know, anyone who knows anything about KD knows that he slept in this community center as a kid. He would go in there and that would be his little haven. That's where he would hoop. And this one dude, you know, it's in the hood and you know, y'all know how it is. If you ain't from here, don't come here. You know, like, so I'm this reporter coming all the way from Oklahoma and I go into the front of the rec center and this dude is working the desk and he was giving me a lot of pushback, man. He wouldn't even let me go inside the gym just to take a quick peek at what, you know, what it looked like, just to be able to describe it in my article. And he was like, oh, you ain't got an appointment, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what do I need an appointment for, bro? It's a rec center. So, yeah. Man, I called some people with the Thunder. Next thing I know, KD called a rec center and is like, yo, this is one of our writers from Oklahoma. You know, can y'all just let him in there? So he's just trying to do a story on me, you know, in honor of me making my all-star team or whatever. And the dude still didn't let me in there, but the fact that KD, you know, took the time to call this cat and it's like, yo, this is Kevin Durant, and you know, he's there on my behalf. Mm. You know, not many players, period, would do that.
Wow.
Let alone superstars at the level of Kevin Durant. So I always appreciated my time working with him and being able to tell some of his stories.
Wow, that's awesome, man. So you go from OKC, you know, you make that move to Chicago. What was the first thing that kind of threw you about covering the Chicago Bulls?
How bad they are. Mm. Just like outside looking in, you know, and I was watching the Bulls from afar when, you know, Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook had their little thing, you know, being the most of the athletic point guards in the league at a time. And I was a big Derrick Rose fan, huge Derrick Rose fan. But I appreciated how Tom Thibodeau had that team playing, especially defensively. Like that team would get after you. I always felt like the Bulls were a no-nonsense organization. I always felt like they were buttoned up. And then I got here and I started covering them, and I'm like, it's a different story.
Unbuttoned.
Yeah, man. That was the thing that really took me back. On the outside, there was this perception that I had of the organization, like a model franchise. You know, you can even go back to the first piece I wrote for The Athletic. If you guys remember, The Athletic had all these people, why I joined The Athletic.
Yeah.
I was one of the early ones, and I did write one of those pieces. And I talked about how, you know, this is a storied franchise in the NBA. And I'm like, and then I got here, and on my second day, Bobby Portis punches Nico Mirotić. What did I just walk into? So, yeah, and that's the biggest thing.
Oh, man. That's your second day?
That was my second day on the job, bro.
Dude, that is crazy, man. Wow.
I'm sitting here calling John Paxson like, my name's Darnell Mayberry with The Athletic. By the way, can you talk about Bobby Portis and Nico Mirotić? Like, it was an awkward way to have to introduce myself to these folks, man. But, you know, it's just kind of been a little bit of a sideshow ever since, man.
Yeah.
Not to that extreme. You know, where one player sending a teammate to the hospital, but just one thing after another, man. It just seems like they just can't get right.
Can't get right, yeah.
Well, those people are gone, Dave.
Gone.
It's hitless.
Gone, man. They go. The smile is real. So, yeah, let me get into that. Just bring that up, Chris. Jim Boylan, gone. Jeff Tanaka, gone. Gar Foreman, gone. John Paxson is now an advisory role, which I say all his role right now is just to tell AK where to take free agents for dinner. That's kind of exactly what his role is.
The best steakhouse.
Right. That's kind of how I see it. But I'm really – I know your thoughts on Jim Boylan because I read him, and I feel you on Jim Boylan. But take me back, though, to Friday. Like, what was the day like when you woke up and you saw that Jim Boylan had been fired?
It was bad for me because, you know, I had a late night the night before, not because of, you know, going out doing anything like that, but just sleep trouble.
Yeah, so
I woke up to the news, which as a reporter, you know, it's surprising whenever a team breaks its own news. You expect the Wojes, the Shams of the world to be able to have that. You know, so that was the first thing my reporter hat was, wow, the Bulls broke their own news. But and then secondly, I was kicking myself for having to wake up to it because, you know, of a sleepless night the night before.
Right.
But then after that, man, I think it was kind of surprise, shock, because like a lot of fans, I was getting the feeling that he was going to be back. And not just because of the time that was passing, but also because, you know, conversations I was having, you know, as a reporter and gathering information, it's like, I'm hearing that this is a real possibility that he's going to be back. And so I just never expected it. And then I start after that, and I feel like I'm going through the stages of grief. After that, like, I'm thinking, man, it all made sense. Like, they waited till the last day of the regular season, and then they canned the gap. Like, why didn't we think of that?
Yes. I'll tell you why you didn't think of it, because they had already disrupted your basketball sensibilities.
And bruh, it's been
all that logic was gone.
3 years, man. 3 years.
All that logic was out of there. I get it. Like, yeah. I get it. And you know what? On a side note, what I also related to you about, like, that day, and Chris, I ain't told you this, but that Friday, I was asleep. I had a dream, and I'm not bullshitting. I had a dream that I went on Twitter and looked, and the Bulls had fired Jim Boylan.
Wow.
That Friday. And I remembered that because I remember reading your tweet, how you had a dream about Jim Boylan a few weeks ago. That is bad, dude. What in your dream, you said he was staying or he got fired, right?
They said in the release, they said they waived him.
Right.
Waived the coach. I'm like, what kind of dreams am I having over here? It just made all the sense in the world, man. Like, you can make the argument that their season has been over for a long time. You can make the argument that, you know, they didn't know what they were going to do with that second bubble possibility. But at the end of the day, the regular season ended on Friday, and they fired the man Friday morning. So, like, all the pushback Arturis, Connor Chauvis, and Mark Eversley have been getting for how long they took, like, it just made all the sense in the world to – I don't think they had to wait that long, but the timeline adds up when you really think about it.
Chris, go ahead, bro.
Yeah, I've been saying this, Donnell, on every podcast we be doing all summer long, me and Dave. Wait till it is. I said it from the beginning. It's the job. He goes in the office. The season is still going on. I know the fans are impatient, but it's a business. When the season ends, they will get rid of him. That's it. It's no rush. For us as fans, it's different.
Yeah.
But like Dave and I have been saying all along, he's a chef in the kitchen cooking. Leave him alone.
Let him cook.
Leave him alone. The roast ain't done yet. It ain't done. You know, he knows when to turn over the roast.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
I knew it was happening when he got rid of Tanaka. I promise you. That's when I knew I was good. Because I was like, oh, he has basketball logic. And there was no logical basketball reason I could think of to why you would have kept Jim Boylan. There were financial reasons. Like, I was like, okay, financially, you can argue the point of why he's still here. I get that. But basketball-wise, after watching him, after knowing what he said, seeing what he's done and all these things, it made no sense to say, I want to turn over a new leaf. I want to bring all these new people in here. But let me keep this coach that even some of the players don't like. When Daniel Gafford is over playing video games, and he's like, I don't really like him, but he cool. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's dropping little lines like that on him. So we kept imploring Bulls fans to just relax, just chill, let this man cook. It smells good what's coming out that kitchen. And so let that man put that seasoning in, you know what I'm saying? Let him get that paprika going. Let him get that thing going on. And then when he brings it out to you, he will serve everybody. So I knew the moment I would worry, Darnell and Chris, was when the draft came around and he was still here. If that was to happen, then I would have been concerned, you know, but there was nothing you could do at this point. You know, we didn't know if we were having a season, you know what I'm saying? You couldn't even talk to coaches, really. Like, everybody's in the bubble right now. Like, there was nothing really they could really maneuver and do. So it was just dope to see him, like you said, go on that timeline and make that move just like that. So I'm all in on AK. Like, I'm with him, bro. Like, I'm with Mark. When he got Mark Eversley, I was like, yup. Like, everything added up logically, basketball-wise, in my head. And that's something we haven't seen here in a while.
And to your point about that, and I think the larger context of AK doing what he did when he did it is that there's going to be a rhyme and a reason now in Chicago going forward. I think you can clearly see that this man is calculated, he's principled, and regardless of how we view the Jim Boylan situation, how long – he got to stick around once the new management team came on. You can clearly see that AK's decision, the timeline of his decision, there was a rhyme and a reason, and he was real principled about it and structured and disciplined in how he went about it. And I think that bodes well for the future. I think that's going to be a good sign of things to come here with Chicago Bulls basketball.
Mm, yeah. Discipline is the word because he has a calendar in front of him. He says, his is when the season ends. And somebody says, you should fire him earlier. He's like, why? Mm. That's when the end of the season fire. That's all. It was simple for him. I believe it was very simple. Mm. And it was the voices around him that made it not simple.
Yeah.
And I heard people also say that, well, he needs time to evaluate his coaching. I'm like, people have video. They have YouTube. He can watch games. Yeah. He doesn't need to watch him coach. That's on video, some tape. So, yeah.
I have to watch
discipline.
Him.
we have to watch him. I'm pretty sure he watched them. I'm pretty sure he's dealt with them, you know, in a certain instance, also with draft and being gym and whatnot. But, yeah, I think it was a simple decision for him to wait until the season ended. But fans, of course, you know, it's different.
So,
hey, Dave.
Go ahead, sir.
Piggyback on what you were saying about the, you know, your concern being if the draft came around. Forget that. I was looking at this week. My calendar was marked from the lottery. Because if the Bulls got the number one pick in this upcoming lottery, Jim Boylan was still the head coach. My head was going to explode, brother. I'm like, how can you sell to your fan base the number one pick, but yet you've got this coach who everyone can see ain't it? So I was looking at that lottery. Like, if the lottery came around and Jim Boylan was still the coach, that was going to be a tough sell, man. That's contradictory.
No, exactly. It's contradictory, and it wasn't logical. Like, it made no sense at all, basketball-wise, why he would be around, man. So, but he's gone. It's out of here. He's gone, dog. Like, he's in the van, Chris. See, Darnell, on this show, when we get rid of people that are trash, we give them certain ways to get out of here. Like, if you've been good for the Bulls or something like Jimmy Butler was, you get a plane. We say we send Jimmy out here on a nice plane. He was good, you know, solid for the Bulls. We love Jimmy Butler. He was all right. If it was just a player that was just, you know, all right or something like that we thought was just okay, you know, you might get a bus ticket. You know what I'm saying? Like, Luol Deng got a bus ticket from us. You know, we were like, Luol gets the bus ticket. Wow. He got a bus. He was good. I ain't saying he wasn't good, but Luol Deng. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was Luol Deng, man. Like, you get the,
was it?
Get the
bus ticket. You all-star Luol Deng.
Oh, he please, was. Barely. By the fall.
You can't take away from the man, though.
We gave him the
league of minutes played for your Bulls, Luol Deng.
We gave him the platinum bus ticket, man. Like, he got the fly seat. He got the double-decker.
First class.
Yeah, he got the double-decker. You know, he could stretch out. You know, we even gave him the option to get the train if he wanted. You know what I'm saying? Like, we gave him options and stuff. You know, yeah, we appreciated it. But then when it comes down to people that we were just, like, completely trash and we were just happy to see him go, we got them vans. That's what you got. You get in the van. Like, Doug McGurry got a van. Like, everybody gets in the van. Jeff Tanaka definitely got a van. Unmarked, no windows. Got a van.
Let me ask you about Tanaka for a minute, man. Because, sure. Like you say, I'm new. And I know there's a lot of history with the Bulls and the health department and that sort of thing. But from my vantage point, going into that locker room, seeing people work with Tanaka, it seemed like he was a well-respected medical person. What was your biggest issue with Tanaka? Why was he number two on your hit list ahead of Gar Foreman and no mention of John Paxson, by the way?
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I'm sorry I've not put John Paxson. They that was a package deal. Him and Gar was the package deal at number three. And the reason they were number three because I saw that what they actually built. They actually built a team that was ready to compete for a championship and just got injuries, you know what I'm saying, the Derrick Rose injury and all those things. I can't absolve that. Like, a lot of people crapping shit on them, and rightfully so. They've done some ridiculously silly things. But the team that they built, like, were some of your favorite Bulls players ever. Like, Joakim Noah and the Luol Deng, we just went, then Jimmy Butler and Taj and Rose. They went, then they go get Tibbs. Like, they built an actual team that was ready to compete for years for a championship against Miami. And, you know, Rose gets hurt like that. So, those kind of things that they did in the draft is the reason they were number three. Tanaka was number two and definitely respected. I mean, he was there for 11 years. He can't have a game for 11 years and not be respected, you know what I'm saying, by people like that. But when I would watch him and the things he would do on the sideline, on the court, it would drive me crazy. Like, when I would watch him take his time to get out, and I would watch him and I would watch other teams, trainers. Like, when he would take his time just to get out there on the court, Like it drove me insane. When I would watch him just put on one glove instead of two, little stuff like that drove me insane. like silly stuff. Like I remember, I think it was Otto Porter Jr. who was on the ground for like 2 minutes. I think it was against New Jersey. Literally just on the ground, writhing in pain. He didn't get out there, and we counted. It was like a minute and 30 seconds, and he took the long way to get there. He walked along the sidelines. You can walk on the court. He took the sidelines, dog. He stopped, had a hot dog, had a beer, and then went out there and helped that man out. It was driving me insane just watching him do that, man. And then, of course, just all the amount of injury. I'm not saying it was his fault, but all the amount of injuries that were happening with the team, man. Like, I got to look at somebody. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody's getting hurt. Like, what's going on? And this is probably not even his department, but I'm looking at, like, Wendell Carter Jr. putting on 20 pounds when he's 6'9". Like, that made no sense to me, like, at 273. And so I'm like, well, obviously he's going to have foot trouble. Maybe they should work on some stuff like that coming in. We ain't doing that. Like, everybody is on the bench. Everybody is hurt. Everybody's on the sideline. And it just drove me crazy, and I just was like, you know what? Enough of this. Like, it's been 11 years. It's been way too long. Yeah. Like, it's time to, you know, clean break and get up out of here, man. It's time for new things. So, yeah, that's why he was number two on my list.
All right.
Excuse me. I almost dropped my mic talking about Tanaka, man.
And don't forget about Gafford on the court, too, man.
Oh, don't Gafford. In pain. Just left him there. Like, he's just there. He's just sitting there, man. And it was just lackadaisical, man. Like, it would just drive me crazy just watching that stuff, man. And I'm watching other teams, trainers, like the physicians, you know, they looking real official. You know, they got the colored gloves. They got on black gloves. They, what pair you want? You want black? You want blue? You want white? I got you, son. You know what I'm saying? He was doing it like he was in a MASH unit. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was just – it felt like he was just bandaging cats up and was just like, all right, go ahead, get out there. You good. You know what I'm saying?
The interesting thing is AK didn't waste much time letting him go when he got here. So
he did not.
You know, whatever goodwill he had in the organization, whatever, you know, respect he had amongst the players and the other coaches, whoever else, AK saw a different – he must have saw it like you see it. And whatever the reason, you know, he was the fall guy. But I just – like I said, from my 3 years of covering him now, he always seemed to be a well-liked guy, well-respected. You know, I got along with him. I didn't interact with him much, but I got along with him well. You hate to see anybody lose their job.
Correct.
And like you said, it can't all be placed on him. Some of these players got to take accountability for, you know, their bodies as well.
Correct.
And he's not the only one in the medical department, too. So
that's a fact. Those are all facts, sir.
You got to see what else they do. I don't think it's just Tanaka.
I agree. Okay, those are all facts. Okay.
Yeah, and obviously this is just a sign of AK going there and just cleaning house. And that's all it is. You know, 11 years is a long time to be at a job, you know. So I'm pretty sure he's seen plenty of physicians before and probably seen better and worse. And, you know, I wonder what is this a sign towards his attitude as far as, like, keeping the players, the roster? You know, how in love is he with the roster? Because he's cleaning house upstairs and he's getting rid of the coach. I've been feeling like he doesn't – I have a feeling he's going to clean house with the roster we have right now. I don't know how you feel about it, Donnell, but, no, we don't have a superstar. We don't have an all-star on the team. You can let the players all you want to. And think, you know, Lori Marketing, Levine's dope and all this kind of stuff, but we don't have an all-star. like, let's be real. There's no all-star on the team.
Right.
So you can't really keep that and plan to build around that. Now, Kobe White may be an all-star. You don't know. He's right now, he's the golden child right now. That looks like has the most potential to jump levels in the NBA. But Donnell, man, the roster, man, do you think AK is in love with the roster right now with the Bulls? And you think he's willing to part ways with these players and shuffle around for a rebuild, which is long term, which is not good because, you know, you've been waiting for a while.
Yeah, right.
Okay, any leverage will be have now and turning around faster.
I wouldn't say he's in love with the roster. I think it's more that he likes the pieces. I think he really likes what he sees in Levine and Markkanen and Carter, Kobe White. I think, you know, those four you start with, and even Otto Porter Jr., you know, he's going into the last year of his contract. He's still a relatively young guy. You may be able to re-sign him on a relatively cheaper deal. So But I understand your point. There isn't as much as an all-star on this roster, and if you can flip some of those pieces for other assets, then I don't think he's going to be opposed to doing that. I mean, he has said that he's not going to come in and just get rid of pieces and players just for the sake of doing it. He wants to evaluate these guys. He wants to see what he has. And when you really look at it, I mean, I think it makes sense. Zach LaVine's on a good contract. Kobe White's second-year player. Lauri Markkanen's only going into his fourth year. And Wendell Carter Jr. is only going into his third season. So these guys are all still young. And if you don't have them, they're kind of pieces. We can say they're not all-stars yet, but these are pieces that most teams are trying to collect. So, you know, young talent, versatility, length, athleticism, scoring, shooting. The Bulls have some of those components. It's just a matter of being able to piece it all together, which kind of goes back to the Jim Boylan angle, and whether or not someone can come in and do that. I don't think – I'd be surprised if Arturas comes in and just starts trading pieces left and right.
Right. So I have to ask, because I ask everybody who comes on, and Chris knows my love for Lauri Markkanen. And I, because I believe in the Lauri Markkanen for a long time. I see your head shaking already. Come on down there. Rusty. Give me some love on Lauri Markkanen, man. Come on and be on my side, brother. Come on, man.
I'm listening.
Man, I just want to know your feelings on him. And do you think he does have the potential to be a star in this league? Because I really think he has that potential when I see him. But there are a lot of factors. And I get it. Like, this year was a complete regression, but everybody regressed on this team except like Kobe White and Zach LaVine, who clearly just said, screw it, we play in our style of games and we're going to do it our way like this. But watching guys like Wendell Carter Jr. Regress, and of course watching Lauri Markkanen kind of regress, and just everybody on that team, like, you didn't have a positive view of their games this year and how they look.
Yeah.
Lauri Markkanen, man, it's something I see in him, man. And it just, I just really believe in this cat, and I want to give him one more year. I'm giving him one more year, because now he's getting to like that Jay Cutler territory where I believed in him somewhere. I'm like, no, he don't have this. He didn't have this. He didn't have this. This is why he wasn't good. And then when he got all that, he still was who he was. And then I was like, okay, I'm completely wrong. With Lauri Markkanen, I feel myself like this is that year that if I don't see it, then I'll be like, okay, well, this ain't it. Because now he's getting the things that he wants and the things that he would have, a better coach, a front office that kind of understands the kind of game that he plays, because he's clearly an unselfish dude and not a guy who's going to be demanding of the basketball and things like that. He kind of plays within the offensive flow like that. So I want to see what's put around him and how they utilize him. But come on, man. You got to be on my side. Give me some love. I'm on this island by my man Lauri Markkanen, man. Come on, dog.
Lonelier and lonelier, isn't it?
Hey! I visit the island once in a while, and I come through to say what's up and leave.
He does. He stopped by and drops off a package. You know what I'm saying? To say what's up to the boy.
I let him know. Let's update me. What's going on?
Right.
I'm like, Chris, I'm gonna check in on you, but I ain't gonna stay on that island.
Okay.
I'm in the middle. I'm in the middle on Lauri, because you got to remember he's a new father, and I just saw a report that, you know, they're expecting their second child.
You're right, right, correct.
We don't know what these guys have going on off the court half the time. He did play for a coach that didn't put him in the best positions to succeed. Oh. He did not have a point guard who could consistently get him the ball in scoring positions.
Correct.
He did have a system that was not conducive to his overall skill set. With that being said, no, before I go to the downside of it for you, Dave,
yes, sir.
We have seen his potential. We have seen him show promise. We saw that February that a lot of people are starting to get sick of hearing about. I'm sure
you're not. Lauri.
February.
We saw that season opener at Charlotte.
Yes, 36-17. Come on.
We have seen this man's potential. I actually think he even had a good December, if I recall correctly.
He did.
I didn't play some bum teams in December.
They did, yes.
And he took advantage. But he took advantage. So there is still reason to believe in Lauri Markkanen. Where I jump off the wagon is he should be doing things naturally that we don't see him do. Mm-hmm. Whether that's taking advantage of a mismatch in the post, whether that's the shot clock running down and you demanding the ball and going to make a play, whether that's just getting your own shot. Like, there are certain things, and then defensively as well, I've seen him get taken advantage of too many times. We saw Jabari Parker come in here and have that revenge game against Laurie and made him look real bad. We saw Zion Williamson in the preseason come in, hadn't really even stepped on an NBA floor hardly before, and just went at Laurie, and Laurie didn't have anything he could do about it. And so those are the signs that I need to see from Laurie Markkanen, where, yes, we know what you're capable of, but until you start doing it and doing it consistently, it's hard for me to believe in you that you are superstar potential. I believe he can be a really good player, but in order to say that he's going to be able to take that jump and become an all-star or a superstar, there's certain things that's just inherent in players that I'm not seeing in him. We shouldn't have to talk to him about his passivity. We shouldn't have to talk to him about his lack of touches or lack of shot attempts. He should be going out there and commanding the ball and doing those things on his own. And for him to be in his third year, there are too many excuses that I've heard that I've just given that say this is why he's not playing up to his ability. In his fourth year with a new coach, new management team, and some stability, I'm not here for any more of those excuses. We need to see him take his game to the next level.
You sound exactly like Chris right now, man. These are all the things Chris.
I think there are more of us than you, Dave.
Yeah. Hey, man. The great ones have to stand alone. It's okay. I'm all right, baby. You got to stand alone. I'm with it, man. And you know what? And I think it's also because of a lot of – I would watch a lot of, like, Laurie Tate, even when he would play, like, overseas. I would get so angry because I would watch his game overseas. And everything that you're saying that he doesn't do here, I watched him do there. It was completely annoying, like demanding of the ball, taking advantage of little dudes in the post, hitting dudes with the Dirk fadeaway in the post consistently, talking shit, dunking on people. Like, it was like a whole new human being when I would watch him play like that. And then I realized they have an incredible point guard on Finland that knows how to get him the basketball. And Sign him up.
Right.
So I see those things. But when I get here, and there's a disconnect somewhere, you know what I'm saying? There's something gets lost in translation, because when he gets over here, it's just not happening for you. Everything you said is right. Like, everything you're saying is fact, complete fact. And if right now for me is just – I don't want to not believe what I saw, like, because I know what I saw and I know what I was looking at. And I'm like, no, bro, there's something there. Like, there's something not being brought out yet. But you're right. This year is the year. Chris is giving me this year. I'm giving myself this year. This is the last year I'm going to be, like, on it, because he's going to get everything I think that he needs, because it seems like AK and Mark Eversley are those kind of basketball guys that have that kind of basketball logic that will put something around those the kind of building blocks they have on this team. So I want to see what he is this year. But then after that, we can come back on the show and talk about it, you know what I'm saying, and have it out. But I got to give him this year, Donnell. Man. Hey, man. Come on, just visit me on the island is all I ask. Just visit me on the island.
we know ball, man, and we know that it shouldn't take two coaches to get some game out of you. It shouldn't matter.
It's still boiling, though, man.
You saw White went out there and was like, all right. Right, he's somebody got to have that all right moment. You got to be like, all right,
that's true.
Kobe, you know, and he has to have. I want to see the all right. I'm just gonna ball. I haven't seen that.
That is fair.
Laurie Markkanen should have allowed Kobe White to attempt more shots than him, average more shots per game than him. A 19-year-old rookie, come on, man. Like, and Kobe can score. He's got talent. Needs to work on his efficiency. Don't get me wrong, but he can score. But Laurie Markkanen, in his third season, should have come out there, and you know, Zach was gonna do his thing. Zach was gonna be like, "Nah, I'm the go-to guy in this offense."
Right.
And that's fine. I understand if Laurie wanted to allow him to be that, because he's a better scorer. Zach's a better scorer, so he deserves that. But you don't let a 19-year-old rookie come in here and rank second in the team in shots when you're in your third season and you are on an all-star trajectory.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
All right.
Kobe took his money.
Kobe said, yeah, he is messing up his dough. It's true. I want to ask you, because I talked about how it could impact Laurie's game, but is there another player on this team that you see whose game can be impacted positively by these front office changes and a new coach?
You know, I don't even know if he'll be around, but Thomas Satoransky, you know, he was another one we talked about being wildly inconsistent.
Yeah.
You know, all season, really. So I think you talked about them knowing how Laurie plays. I think Thomas Satoransky comes from that similar style where, you know, it's move it, share it, pass and cut, not just camp out on the perimeter and go one-on-one when no one else – when your initial pick and roll doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I think – I mean, Satoransky we've seen is an all-around decent player. You know, he's not great maybe at anything, but he's good at pretty much everything. You know, maybe not individual ball defense, but I look for him to have a better season. And I want to see what Coby White and Wendell Carter Jr. do, man. Like, those guys were restricted in a lot of ways given the system last year. And I want to see what this new management team and whoever they select as a new coach is able to come up with and put those guys in better positions to really use and maximize their talents.
So, yeah. I have to ask you about Otto Porter Jr. because he is somebody I've been completely disappointed with since this season and even into kind of towards
the last. I'm tired. You saying this,
there, Chris?
I warned you about that dude, and you.
I know. And I did. Hey, Chris, I'm like, I put my hopes in dreams. What'd you say?
The warning was that. At least I watched him play. I watched the Wizards play. Over the years, I watched the games play, and there'll be games that he'll be great. Then there'll be games I turn on the game, like, where's he at? Oh, he's on the bench hurt. Like, okay, then he come in the game, score like 5 points, but the last 2 weeks he averaged 20. Like, he just goes and disappears.
Yeah.
And that was his MO in Washington. The Nassas even told me that watching the game. It was evident watching the game. So when the Bulls got him, I'm like, listen, good player and everything, but he's going to be hurt half the time. He's going to be hurt. You're going to wish he was better than what he was because he's going to drop 20 points. Yeah. Then there'll be games where he's going to drop 7 points. And you want to go and wonder where the hell's Otto Porter at.
Yeah.
And that's what he's been with the Bulls. The same thing. Inconsistent, doesn't play, always hurt, plays good sometimes, and disappears a lot.
Yeah.
And so I'm not surprised by it. And I tried to warn Dave, but I guess it's hope.
No, the Wizards outsiders told us this when we got him, when we made that trade. They said everything you just said. It was like, well, guys, he's going to be good in a couple games, and then you're not going to hear from him. Like, he's just going to go away. Like, you're not going to hear from him. Something's going to happen. He's going to get injured. We don't know what it is, why he does this kind of stuff, but that's just what's going to happen. And it's exactly what has happened. But I think what threw me off more was to start the season, well, they made him team captain, and then he came in not really in shape. Like, he wasn't totally in shape. He kind of played himself in there. And then immediately that injury happened. You know what I'm saying? And then when he's fully healed, he's like, no, I'm coming off the bench. You know what I'm saying? I don't feel like starting right now. Like, it's a lot riding on him, I think, this year. I mean, obviously, he's getting the $28 million. He's the second highest paid player in Chicago behind Khalil Mack. You know what I'm saying? So, there's a lot going in for him this year. But, Darnell, like, what is your feeling on Otto Porter Jr., man? Like, how important is this year, not only for him, but for the Bulls? Because it seems like their success is kind of linked.
Yeah, I'm with Chris. I grew up a Wizards fan, so you know, the Otto Porter Jr. I got a long history as a fan with Otto Porter Jr.
Okay,
and I took a lot of criticism early on just because I wrote the night the trade happened or the next day that he was going to have a hard time living up to his contract. Not that he was a bad player, not that he was a bad acquisition. But he was going to have a hard time living up to that contract. And just what y'all have talked about, we've seen, you know, phantom injuries, not being in the best shape or best conditioning, you know, inconsistency, showing up one night, not really performing, you know, the next. So I do think he is real pivotal to this offense. You know, the Bulls had one of the worst offenses in the league, and I don't think it's a coincidence that Otto Porter only played 9 games.
Mm.
They need him. They need him. Lauri Markkanen needs him. Zach LaVine needs him. If nothing else, then as an outlet. that they can kick it to, you know, when they're seeing multiple defenders. But right. he's got to stay healthy, man. And like, it kind of feels like he's not even on the team.
Yeah.
In a sense, just because he hasn't really been involved. And then it's funny, I forgot he was a team captain until you just said it. Like, because he hurt so much that he wasn't around, and, you know, like, he didn't play in games, and for a while he wasn't traveling with the team, and it was kind of a weird situation. So I kind of got a feeling he's going to ball this year, though, you know, for obvious reasons. I got a feeling he's going to ball this year. So yeah. I think he could be key to the Bulls making some noise. I just don't believe in the Bulls again until they prove it. That's where I am with this team. Kind of like I am with marketing. I'm in the same place with this team. They got to go out there and actually prove it. And that takes all of them, not just one player, but all of them.
Mm. Yeah, it's important. I think actually I don't know the record day, but I believe the Bulls were below 500 when he started the season, right? So even when he played, the Bulls weren't winning with him in the offense and starting lineup. But to your point, Darnell, he does have every reason in the world to ball out, and he is one hell of a trade asset. You know what I'm saying? Like long, tall. If he plays well, he's a very, very good player, you know, defense and scoring. So he's definitely a good asset to have. So I hope he has a good season. And you know, maybe we could leverage him in some way. But, yeah, to your point, yeah, is this year under new management and trying to impress, you know, the front office for new contract and maybe, contract for the teams going forward.
You know who needs Otto Porter Jr.? Team like the Houston Rockets.
Any winning team could use Otto Porter Jr. Like, any winning team.
That was my whole problem with the trade anyway. They made a move for a guy who's kind of like more of a final piece to the puzzle, not someone to get the puzzle started. Like, he's not. And they went out and made a championship caliber move, and they weren't even a playoff team. And they gave away their cap space to do it. And it was just like, what is happening here? So he's a good player. He's got a lot of left in the tank if he can stay healthy. And he will help. Don't get me wrong. He will help. But help you do what? Go from 22 wins to 34 wins?
That's the point. All right. So before I get into this tournament, man, I do have one more question. It's about Chris Dunn. And we talked about Chris Dunn a lot on this show. Because I kind of view Chris Dunn as kind of how you said about Otto Porter Jr. Like, he's a piece. Like, if you're a championship team and a team that's about to compete for a championship, having a guy like Chris Dunn is awesome. Like, I always look at Chris Dunn as like rims on a car. You know what I'm saying? Like, you should worry about your engine first, you know what I'm saying, and getting your car started and stuff like that before you put rims on it. So I understand, for me, he's a luxury. Like, having that guy who's awesome defensively, but – he's a luxury to me. How are your feelings on Chris Dunn as far as a point guard and his future here with the Chicago Bulls?
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you, man, like 100%, because Chris Dunn is limited offensively. Like, if he had a jumper, that'd be a totally different story.
Right.
If he had, like, the point guard savvy where he could control, run a team, run an orchestrated offense, that'd be a different story. But he's a downhill attacker. You know, he can make the simple play from the point guard spot, and he's not a good three-point shooter. So I think what he gives you defensively is great. It's phenomenal. But, you know, if his ceiling is like Marcus Smart, and you seeing what Marcus Smart is doing in Boston, like, Marcus Smart works in Boston because they got all them other cats around him.
Right.
Marcus Smart can't be Marcus Smart in Chicago.
Right.
And you asking Chris Dunn to be Marcus Smart, but he doesn't have all those other cats around him. So I just think with him coming up for money now, like, the Bulls should take a long, hard look at how else they can fill out their roster, what other needs they have before putting rims on the car, like you said. Let's get this mug running first before you start to trick it out.
That's real. That's real. All right, man. Darnell, it's now time, sir, like, to have some fun with you, brother.
Yes.
Let's have a good time here, because this is a celebration show. And this, what we did for this tournament, has been nothing but timely. This is our seventh annual Tournament of Trash. In the past, we've done worst front office decisions. We've done worst first-round draft picks, worst free agent signings, worst LeBron is better than Jordan arguments, which is probably the favorite one. But this year we did worst Jim Boylan quotes. Definitely resonated with the fans when we did this. We've had some great guests. We had D. Jackson, our guy D. Jackson and Tone in the first round. We had C. Red Fred for the second round. And for our final round, before we hand it off to the people, will be Darnell Mayberry. You picked and decide who goes to the next round. What quote is the worst to go to the next round? This is you're picking the championship. So this is the final four right now. So you decide who goes to the championship, sir. Chris and I each hold one veto. We call it the C-Red Fred rule. We've only had to use it on C-Red Fred. We've never had to use it. It's only to preserve the integrity of the tournament. That's the only reason it's there. But we've only used it that one time. So are you ready, sir?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. There are two regions. There's the jacked region and the juiced region. Which region naturally would you like to start with?
Naturally, I'm jacked up. I'm juiced. I'm jacked up. Let's do it. Let's do it. I'm jacked.
All right. All right.
And then you want to do a recap, you know, sort of a summary of what's going on?
Oh, as far as the quotes?
Yeah, the quotes, yeah.
Oh, there was a top 16 quotes. We could have did 32, but it got depressing. So we did 16. there was the ones who didn't make it were, because I said so.
Oh.
Bulls across the chest. Vocal in the meal room. Giannis struggles against little guards. he's a Zephlophoid. The Field of Dreams quote. The five-player sub quote. You know, when he subbed out those five players and then talked about Pop. It's crazy. The road dog mentality, which we still don't know what that means. He's a football player. He was talking about Shaq Harrison. Chris told me he could do it. It was his why he said, you know, he had that jump ball against Larry Nance Jr. for some reason, which is insane. And double lose. All those classics. But they all did not make it to the final four. So this is the final four. Both the number one seeds made it. So we're going to start with the jacked region. So the number one seed, Luke Kornet is Robert Horry. Going against the number four seed, Battled. You know, Battled is a Jim Boylan classic. You can't think of him without saying that word, Battled. It's to the point where I don't even like the word anymore. That's just say Battled. So it's annoying. And Luke Kornet is Robert Horry. I mean, all I have to say about it is when you made Stacey King come out of character when he said it. Like, Stacey King was like, what? He was like, what are you talking about? That's insane. So Luke Kornet is Robert Horry against Battled. Darnell, who moves on to the championship?
And this is a lot of pressure because what you have to understand is half the time I was there when he talked about they'd get their heads kicked in and then he talked about we battled.
Yes.
We battled. I'm like, you just lost by 25 points. What are you talking about, you battled? Oh, well, we won the third quarter. No, it was never the third quarter. I'm sorry. We won the second quarter.
Right. Right.
It's like, come on, man. Battle. So I got a like a special place for Battle.
Mm.
But that Luke Kornet, Robert Horry, because it's not just that Robert Horry got 1,100 championships
that
he contributed to.
Right.
It's that he decided that Luke Kornet was going to be his hill to die on. Luke Kornet, who couldn't. This dude couldn't throw it in the ocean. Bro.
Dude.
I'm gonna have to go with Luke Kornet as Robert Horry.
Oh.
All right.
Dude, yeah. It's yes. Yeah. Like, I have no arguments with
it. It's gotta be Luke Kornet as Robert Horry. And then the Stacey King thing puts it over the top.
Yeah.
Because Stacey King was around and he knows. That brother ain't no Robert Horry.
Right, exactly.
In any way, shape, or form, can you put together Luke Kornet and Robert Horry?
In no way, shape, or form. And that was what did it. Honestly, that's kind of what moved it on because this almost lost in the first round to Cuz I Said So. It's almost lost.
That would have been a good upset.
It would have been enough. Yeah, it went to overtime. But until then, I played that clip for my guy D, and he was like, "Oh no, okay."
Raheem too, because she had that stand up report, and she introduced it, and you could tell on her face it was like, "This is some bullshit."
Yeah, she was like Robert Horry. She was like, yeah. So anytime you make Stacey and Leia just break character when they, as you said, disrupt your basketball sensibilities. Anytime that happens, yeah, man, he moves on. Chris, you're not upset at this, I take it.
Bitch shot Cornette. No, that'll have to win. So I think that has to move on.
Gotta move on, man. All right. So Luke Cornette. Is Robert Horry will represent the Jack region in the championship. In the Juice region, we have the number one seed preparing the child for the road. Against the number three seed, Felicio is our best screener. So everybody.
Chris, you like that one?
Yeah, man.
I just know there's so many games where David and I are texting, and we're like, why is he in the game? Why? I think a reporter finally asked him, like, boy, why is he playing so many minutes? And
he's our best screener. What? That's why he gets to take over Daniel Gafford? That? What are you?
So in the fourth quarter, Dave, in the game in the fourth quarter, like, setting screens.
The dude who forgot.
Pick and pop. Who can't pop.
He forgot to come in the game in the fourth quarter against the Wizards. He forgot to come in the game. He said, oh, snap, let me put my hot dog down. It's a fourth quarter and 5 seconds left. And Jim Boylan didn't even realize it. Oh, my God, man. Whoa. Jesus Christ. What a silly thing to say. And then, of course, preparing the child for the road is just honestly the classic of all Jim Boylan. If it was the greatest hits, this would probably be the one that was double platinum. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a hit right there. Preparing the child for the road. Another road the child. And man, these are men. Oh, my gosh. And Darnell, and it's hilarious to me because I'm sure you were there for a majority of these quotes. And I can just imagine what's going on in your brain, man, when you're having to relive these kind of things, sir.
I'm glad we can laugh about it now. I was not laughing about it when I heard half this stuff, man. I promise you that. But you know what? It's been a rough 2020, as we all know. Yeah. My jaws are hurting, bro. I haven't smiled this much since early March. So I appreciate y'all having me on for this. My jaws literally hurt right now.
Hey, brother, this is what we're here for, brother. That therapy, brother, we're here for it.
Man,
but it's your choice, sir. The number one seed, preparing the child for the road against the number three seed. Felicio is our best screener. Who moves on to the championship?
I got to be honest, I don't recall the exact moment or setting that he said either one of these.
Mm.
I remember preparing the role for the child for the role. Like, I remember it being a talking point, but I don't remember when he said it and the context and all of that. And I definitely don't remember anything about Cristiano Felicio being the best screener. And I'm glad I wasn't there for that. Maybe I was, and I zoned out like I'm prone to do with a lot of Jim Boylan interviews. But I'm going to have to go with what seed was it? He's preparing the child for the road.
That's number one seed, yes.
I'm going to have to go with the top seed, preparing the child for the road.
Okay, all right. I mean, it's like I said, that's the double platinum hit right there, man.
Classic.
That's the one. You know, that's the what's going on right there. You know what I'm saying? That's 1999. You know what I'm saying? That's Thriller. You know what I mean? Like, that's the one, though. That's the one. That's
Chris, you're not going to veto me, are you?
Oh, no, no.
Oh, no. No. There's no veto. You know, it's Final Four. All of them are qualified to go to the finals.
Yes. Yeah.
My favorite, though, was the Felicio one.
That dude.
Yeah, that's because, like, why is he out there playing anyway?
We laughed about it often, all the time.
It's funny. It's the most funniest. I put it out, man.
It's insane. All of these are completely insane, and wouldn't be so sad if they weren't for my team. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would probably find it much more funny if it was somebody else's squad. But now I can laugh. It's joy because I don't have to deal with it anymore. No one has to deal with it anymore. It's a new day. Things have changed, sir. So. Your championship for the people will be Luke Cornette is Robert Horry against preparing the child for the role. Dub, who do you think is pulling this one out?
I'm not the biggest fan of preparing the child for the role, but you know, that's me. So whatever. I think the Ori one is just so outrageous. This dude's going to Hall of Fame for only for hitting big shots and winning championships.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it. That's
it's called Big Shot Rob. And it explains so much. It explains why he played him over Gafford so often. It explained why he tried to really put a square peg in a round hole in the starting lineup. And he gave him all this tick because he's like looked at him and was like, that's Robert Horry. Clearly he's better than Gafford. And like we was like, why is he on the floor? It explains a lot for me, him as a coach, too. The misevaluation of talent.
Yeah.
The misevaluation of talent. So that to me is the most ridiculous, and I think it explains a lot more about his coaching ability. And I think that's gonna take it home.
Darnell, who you got?
Hit the nail on the head, man, because I actually reported in October that Jim Boylan was instrumental in them bringing on Luke Kornet.
Jesus.
So Gar and Pax.
Oh my God, that makes it worse.
they listened to Jim Boylan's recommendation. It was Jim Boylan who, you know, kind of spotted him in New York, liked what he did against, I think it was Embiid. And he took that to Gar and Pax, and he was the point person on signing Luke Kornet. So that's why he played so much over Daniel Gafford to begin with, because he was trying to make his guy, you know, put his guy in that position. And that then his quote comes out, and you're like, come on, John. what are we doing here?
And if you notice, he tried. It's kind of who I think he was trying to turn Lloyd Marketing into. He was trying to turn him into, like, Luke Kornet. Like, seriously, like, because the offense for Luke Kornet, it worked well for him. Spot-up shooter. This is all I set a screen and spot up. Man, I can do that all day long. And he's like, Lori, why can't you do that? You're 7 feet tall. You shoot. You do that too. Luke, y'all the same.
No. Why can't you guard the pick and roll like Wendell Carter Jr.? Y'all the same.
Y'all the same, right? Y'all both play center. Like, y'all should be doing it. Oh, what an embarrassment. Dude, it's over. I got to keep saying it because it's true. It's over. It's done. But that is your championship. Luke Kornet is Robert Horry against preparing for the child for the road. You will be able, Bulls fans, to vote. You will pick who wins the Tournament of Trash, as you guys do every year. We will put the poll on Twitter. You guys decide who wins the what we went giving away again, Chris? The retired Norm Van Leer jersey trophy?
That's who yes.
Retired Norm Van Leer's jersey trophy is what you win every single time, because his jersey should be retired. Darnell, man, thank you for coming on here, bro. Damn. This has been an absolute blast. You've honestly, this is really honestly what I thought this was going to be, and it's exactly that. I know where to follow you on Twitter, at Darnell Mayberry, but please let the people know where they can read your work, sir.
We're at theathletic.com, The Athletic Shy on Twitter, and just look into The Athletic if you haven't already. Check out the subscription, no ads, just only sports content that people come to know and love and expect, man. So give us a shot at The Athletic.
Man, and you can follow us at Ball Sports. Check out our site, ballsports.com. Check out Ball and Ball on Bulls. We are on everywhere you listen to a podcast, Spotify, Apple Music, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast from, we are definitely there. Chris.
Yeah, they say it all, man. And of course, you know, great fans, you guys can support, you know. Go to ballsports.com, BAWLsports.com. There's a blue donate button. Contribute financially if you can't. Spread the word. And thank you to our fans who helped us out over the years. You know, just, you know, get the word out, man, about the show.
Yes. Twitter, ballsports and ballsports1. Instagram, ballsports. On behalf of Darnell Mayberry, my man Chris, a.k.a. C-Dub, I am Big Dave. It's over, y'all. Enjoy. Peace.